This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Webb Conference in Austin, 2011.
Since most of you can read, you already know that How to Break Things Really Good is the title of this session. And I really mean it. Breaking things can be very good. In fact, I have a slide about that. Good is breaking things. There's a little bit of vandal in all of us, I think. You know, you at least like to step on the puddles when they're just freshly frozen, break the ice, or throw rocks in the lake, or throw rocks at something else. But that's not so much what I'm talking about naturally enough. It's quality assurance that's good. And quality assurance testing requires that you break things, or at least try to. So that's why we're talking about breaking things today. And if it taps into your little inner vandal, that's okay too. I know I get a little buzz when I really make something bad happen on the screen. I'm like, yes, I nailed it. So if that appeals to you, I think you're in the right place. But breaking things when you test is good because you are doing it before your users get a chance to. That's the whole point of breaking things when you're testing, because your users will break things if you don't do it first. So that's what this session is about. Some principles and techniques for testing web development projects to assure that they're ready for your users, because that's what you want. Now, what kind of testing exactly am I talking about? Here are my assumptions, right or wrong, and even if some of these aren't quite true for you, it doesn't mean that you should leave, so please don't, because that would be depressing. But I assume that you launch elements that go outside or beyond your site's usual functionality, at least occasionally, if not regularly. In other words, you got new stuff, not just new content, you know, in an existing layout, but you know, some new gizmo. Otherwise, your testing is called copy editing. I assume that you are somehow responsible for overall quality in some way. That might be in your title and your job description, or it might be just because you care. But one way or another, if you feel innerly responsible or your boss thinks you're responsible for quality, I'm assuming that that's one of the reasons you're interested in this topic. And then finally, I assume that you don't like things to suck. If you do like things to suck, then again, this session will really not be much interest. By sucking, I mean letting your users have problems with your site. And again, I have a slide about this here, problems. What kind of problems, thank you. What kind of problems am I talking about? In fact, I'm going to have to let your imagination run wild here. But I'm talking about everything that could start with actually things that are so basic as copy editing. In fact, all quality assurance testing should include at least copy editing, because typos in forms are just as stupid as typos in prose. So when you're testing, be sure to actually read the language as well. But it's everything from there on up through what may be for you very sophisticated routines of usability and user experience. This session isn't necessarily about those, because those are whole other topics, but it's really a wide range of things. The point is, you want to solve problems before your users have them. And again, I notice that I have not assumed that you're in any particular department in your university. You might be in admissions, and you know that it'll be your prospects who will call confused. You might be in IT, and you know that you'll get called or get the help desk ticket. You might be in marketing. Any of us, no matter where we are, can catch flack for problems on our sites. So that's why I think it actually makes sense for testing and some tips and principles on testing to be useful for just about anybody. Mostly, though, I am talking about projects with more technical moving parts, you know, not just copy editing. Big things like online application, admission application forms, and forms of all kinds, actually. In fact, a lot of my examples are going to be drawn from forms, because I don't know about you, but we make a lot of forms. They're relatively easy to make these days, and so we produce a lot of them, so they need a lot of testing. And they make good examples, I think. But you might have payment processes. You might even have just multi-channel communications that involve an interface between a printed piece that has a URL in it, and how is that going then when people actually connect? You got to test something like that even when it's relatively straightforward, especially let alone when you get into social media, making sure links go to the right places, your analytics work, all that kind of stuff. Standalone mobile apps. I mean, you've been at this conference here a couple days. You know the full range of stuff that might need testing. In fact, I can think you can. I'm sure you can tell me plenty of other examples. Anybody have some examples of things you are testing these days, or you wished you had tested before you launched them recently? Yeah, just call them out. Yeah. Well, there aren't many events going on, probably, so that's no problem. Yeah. Right. Right. There you go. That's awesome. Yeah. Wait, that's my RSS feed you're talking about. I've seen that same thing. Yeah, it's why well, I already missed it. I mean, we actually really got calls from people worried that they'd missed the event. It was 3 months out, but they thought they saw the timestamp for today. Right. Yeah. It looks fine in the CMS. In the CMS, right?
It looks fine in the CMS. And not only that, they also didn't build the stuff in the background to generate navigation. So you had to do the navigation by hand in the CMS.
Okay. We're going to stop now because the nightmare scenarios are too disturbing to me. I'd like to sleep tonight. These are all great examples, though. You notice how some of them are more technical, some of them are processes, some of them are editorial issues. There's a wide range here, so keep all of this stuff in your head here as we talk about the rest of this today. I have four principles and seven techniques to share with you today. That adds up to 11 because this is MMP 11, and it's actually not. It's just a coincidence. But when you're wondering, well, what do we do when we're coming up on needing to launch something, whether it's small or large, I hope that these four principles and seven techniques might help you keeping the principles in mind and then the techniques here to turn those principles into some practical steps. So there's one slide with all of them on here because I know some of you like that, but don't worry, you don't have to write them all down. We're going to be going through them. And in fact, you may have noticed on the slide at the beginning, the slide deck is online. And there, all the links that I mentioned are also online at that link. So if you don't want to write anything down, you don't have to, or at least if it's on the screen. So four principles. Don't assume it works. Remember the humans. It's not paranoia if they really are trying to hack you. And let things break well. Those are the four principles. And then seven techniques that I'll flesh out a lot more. Time, notes, instructions, variations and mutations, the end of the pipe, that little voice, and watching for value. Okay, so let's move through these. First, the four principles. And you notice I numbered them all. I thought about doing A and B and numbers. So if it resets to one in the middle, you're not crazy. It's actually, we're just on the techniques. Four principles. Number one, don't assume it works. In fact, this is principle number one. We could just stop right here. I think in my experience, this is the number one thing, literally, that a tester should keep in mind. And if you've watched people testing poorly, it's almost always this one that they forget. I have literally seen people pull up a form on their, you know, having been told that it was ready. Oh, that looks good. Yeah, green light. They are assuming that it works. It could be a flat JPEG, you know, in an HTML, and you know, hey, it looks good. In fact, I really maybe ought to strengthen this. I maybe ought to say, assume that it doesn't work. That's, again, though, that's just a little too depressing. So this is really the fundamental session. You probably know that all copy has typos, right? There's no, it is impossible to publish a book without at least one typo. It is impossible to do an alumni magazine, just about anything with any kind of length. That is true of everything we make, us humans. All software has bugs, period. There's an anthem for quality testers. It's Bob Dylan's song, Everything is Broken. And if you, in fact, I've got the link here. You can go read the lyrics and stream the song here. If you don't know this one, it's a great song. It's basically just he goes on about everything's broken and how everything's broken. The first line, in fact, could be written as if he were a coder, because the very first line of the song is broken lines, broken strings. And I don't think he's actually talking about our kind of lines and strings, but that's a song. In fact, cue that up in your head and hum it along while you're doing your testing, and you'll be just fine. Anyway, don't assume that it works. Principle number two is remember the humans. And what I mean by this is that technology is personal, and it's relational, and it's emotional, and it's social. Yes, even for the humans who develop our web technology. they are real humans, and so they would like you to be friendly when you're testing. And in fact, maybe not just friendly, but it's better if you're friends with them. So a couple of things I suggest here to ease this is meet face-to-face as often as you can with the people who are developing your web projects. Talk about what you love about the projects when you're testing. Sometimes it's tempting to report only the bugs, but if once in a while something you really, wow, this worked really well, or wow, you nailed this one, that helps. Another one, in my experience, is very important, is to admit your own ignorance about what they're good at, and ask for them to help you come up to speed on how they approach a particular problem. It's really easy to sit back and take pot shots, especially when there's something that turned out to be a judgment call on their point, on their part, in terms of making the code. But pay homage to their skills with a Z at the end. And that usually helps, again, under the heading of remembering the humans. And if all else fails, bring them food. This is very effective, and I'm not kidding. Fortunately, we do a lot of baking in my house, and I walk over to IT a lot with cookies and brownies and stuff like that. And that means that every time I show up, they're not frightened about that I'm bringing bad news, but it might be brownies this time. And actually, the other thing about remember the humans is don't be afraid. If you do all these things, good developers will actually really appreciate that you're interacting with them and finding stuff that they didn't see. Bad developers don't always. But you actually want to know who those which is which anyway. Good developers, the ones you want to be working with anyway, in the first place, actually love hearing your bug reports. Okay, I realized, that was a principle, but I got into some tips and techniques there too, so this presentation's a mess. Number three, it's not paranoia if they really are trying to hack you, and of course they are trying to hack you, right? Do we have large bodies of intelligent young people with lots of time on their hands, interested in mischief and getting ahead? Yes. It is inevitable that somebody is probing the edges of what you're doing, whether that's for little gain, you know, they just want to make funny tweets on the university account, or whether they actually want to get into your payment systems or something like that. So this is one, again, that really could be a whole, not only just a whole seminar in its own right, but a whole workshop or a whole conference on its own. Don't want to necessarily get into all the things you need to do to worry about security here, but if you keep in mind that you ought to be maybe a little more paranoid than you naturally are. Now, actually, I don't know how paranoid you are to start with, so some of you maybe should be a little less paranoid. But I think the marketing and enrollment people who might be here tend to be pretty happy and assume that things are going to go well, and you need to be just a little bit more concerned about the nefarious purposes that the stuff that you're testing could be put to. And I have an example of this This is fortunately one that didn't actually go live before we caught it. I worked for a nonprofit where you could, there was a great portal and you could log in and everybody did their own fundraising and you could basically tap into the Oracle database and see, you know, how donations toward your work had been coming in. And I just noticed the easiest of all hacks, which is that my employee number was in the URL. So it's not hard to learn everybody else's employee number because it's in the directory, because they're directory. So I tried the president's ID number in the URL, and then I covered my eyes because I really didn't, I wanted to be able to claim that I had not actually looked at his financial reports. And the first reaction of the guy who developed was like, oh, nobody's going to do that. I was like, well, I just did, and I thought of it, and I don't think I'm going to be the only one. So anyway, a little paranoia goes a long way. I've actually got an illustration of this here. This is a different, slightly different example. It's kind of small. I don't know if you're going to be able to see this here, but for a while we were looking at a recommendation, an online application system that did recommendations, and it was the same kind of thing. There were parameters right in the URL. So ID, you know, 12345, and then your recommender's email address was here. Well, as the applicant, you knew your number, and of course you'd entered the emails of the people who were recommending, and yet we claimed, we were going to have to claim that these recommendations were confidential, and, you know, if the recommender had not waived, you know, their right to privacy, and yet it would be super easy to URL hack into the form that these folks were using. So it's not, again, never went live. I suppose I shouldn't have put that right here on my university's masthead right there. Do not associate North Park with that problem because we didn't go live with it. Okay, guys? finally, the fourth principle, let things break well. I don't know if you've heard this before, but things can break badly or they can break well. When something breaks well, there's some kind of fail-safe or backup, or it just doesn't, the whole thing doesn't explode. But when things break badly, they either cascade or get out of hand, and you have way bigger problems than if it simply stopped working. So, you know, an unfortunate, worst case and classic example of something that broke badly is the O-rings on the shuttle booster rockets in the 80s. Turns out if it gets cold, they shrink a little bit, no problem, you get just a little, they open up a little bit. Oh yeah, and then the whole thing explodes in space. I mean, it's a problem that then becomes a much bigger problem because it breaks badly. And you've probably seen this too. A form can break well and you just get, the form reloads and it says, we weren't able to process your request or something. Or it can break badly and it goes blank and you don't even get a warning message or the browser crashes or something like that. You're looking for ways during your testing to make sure that even if you can't fix everything, that you can help things break badly. A classic instance of this that we'll talk about a little bit more as I go along is validation errors on forms. If you really want people to put in 5-digit zip codes if they live in the U.S., then you can program that so that it says, please enter a valid zip code if they've failed to do that. Whereas if you didn't do that, all of a sudden you don't have a zip code, you don't have any way to mail them at all, they've gotten away, maybe they didn't put in an email address, and you've got no prospect at all. That would be breaking badly in your case. So you can expect perfection when you're testing, but I don't know, my advice is you should be happy with pretty a little less than perfection, but you ought to be giving some thought to, well, at least does it break well? Okay, yeah, you do, sometimes you do have to settle eventually, you really do have to launch, and again, this principle comes into play. Okay, on to the techniques. Those are the four principles. Here are just some 7 techniques, and I'm going to be really interested in kind of conversation when I'm done with these, because you may have other particular kinds of things. But these are the sorts of things that I keep in mind when I'm testing, and some things that have helped me at least understand what the problems are in testing. The first one is take the time to test. Somebody mentioned already, oh, well, launch was coming up and we didn't actually have time to test. This is the, this is classic advice, right? Oh, thanks for the advice. leave plenty of time. Don't leave home at the last minute to get to the wedding you're supposed to be at in 10 minutes. So this is easy advice to give, hard advice to take. But that's why I put it in the techniques, or call them disciplines if you want. If you need to figure out how to build this into as a discipline to your development cycles, to your launch cycles, then that's what you have to do. If you can't consistently build in testing time before launch, you're going to need to learn how to postpone launch dates so that you can. It's just really important to do. Testing is time-consuming. It's like copy editing or design reviews or anything else you where you're trying to get it right. You have to slow down. I don't know if you've ever seen a professional copy editor work, actually watch them work. I worked at an amazing publishing company for a while, and the copy editors there were trained. I've never seen this anywhere else, but it might be more widespread, but copy editors there were trained to put a dot above every single word so that they would, to prove, basically, it's like the night watchman going around and punching into all the stations. I put a dot here, I've read this word, going through every one. Because as you know, intelligent readers read whole sentences at a time or whole paragraphs even, and the copy editor's job is actually to slow down. That's actually what you're, when you're doing quality assurance testing, that's what your job is to do, is to slow down too. It's not to like fill out the form as fast as you can. That's what the users are going to do. Your job is to slow down, you don't get any points for finishing first when you're testing. The other reason to take the time is that you are going to find problems. You're going to need time to test. You're going to need time to report them well, and more on that in a second. You're going to need time to get those things fixed, and you're going to need time to test the fixes and also look for other stuff that might have broken while they were fixing stuff. You're going to have to, all that takes time. Now, how much time? This is a judgment call, depends on the project. A big major site launch, you're going to want weeks at least for a news story with an embedded video. You need an extra 15 minutes maybe. So in between those extremes, you're gonna need to know how to make that call. But it will affect how you manage projects, and it should. And I hope you've been to some of the other project management sessions here this week, because Attila the Hun, he'd take your hands off or something like that if you missed a bug. I don't know what. speaking of taking the time, it's great to be able to test parts early if you can. If you wait to test the whole thing until it's done, sometimes that's the only way to do it, but of course then that slows you down if you have to go back and test stuff that you might have been testing along. So work with your developer on whether there's little bits that you can test as you go along. You still need to test the whole thing at the end to make sure they're working well together, of course, but you can save some time that way. And, like I said about copy editors looking everywhere, force yourself to look everywhere. Read the browser title, the window title, right? Because that's actually important. That's going to show up in Google in some places and other search results, and it's going to be important for your search. Don't just scan the page as if you were an actual user. You got to discipline yourself to slow down and take the time. Okay, technique number two. Take great notes and write great bug reports. This one, it probably goes a little bit without saying, but I want to share with you a couple of particular things here about why you need to write this up. This is tied back to remember the humans. People who are going to have to fix stuff, it's really frustrating if you just say, oh, the page doesn't work. Okay, that is not a bug report. That is incoherent babble. If you don't already know, learn how to write good bug reports. Everybody's better off. It also gives you an archive then when it's time to test the fixes. You can go back and actually see what needs to get done. Let me show you a couple. There are a couple of bug noting resources I have for you. First of all, is a fabulous blog post by a legendary developer named Joel Spolsky. This is got a title I can never remember, but it's actually just about how to write bug reports. Let me give you the cheat sheet version. There's three things. You have to identify the steps to reproduce. This is the one that everybody always forgets. It's just like, oh, the page didn't load. Well, on what platform? Where were you coming from? What link did you click on? All those things. You gotta identify as much as you can. This is also what's time consuming. Identifying, figuring out the steps to reproduce. If you can't reproduce it, the developer is not going to be able to reproduce it. So you'd better take the time to do it. Anyway, step one is identify the steps to reproduce. Two is what you expected to see. And three is what you saw instead. Anyway, it's all written up in this URL. That's 8to.me, bug reports with a hyphen. A couple of things that you might want to consider in for doing reporting bugs, really kind of platforms. Acrobat Pro and the annotation tools there can be very useful if mostly, especially if you're actually talking about something that's print and online, spitting out PDFs and then using the commenting tools. You probably all have used commenting tools, but if you have one of the newer versions, click on that comment. I'm sorry, I need to do it in mirror image. The comment tag in the menu of the new Acrobat interface, which I still hate, will open a panel on the left which shows you all the tools. And then also, as you add comments, they get shown there so that even if there's little things and you're like striking through an empty space, it'll still show up in that list. Consider that. It can be really useful, especially if what you're testing is mostly the human interface. Another one that I have liked and have used to good effect from time to time is a product called Notable. It's pretty cool. It's good for sharing bug reports online. It's actually pretty good at allowing you to mark up things, whether you're seeing them in the interface or whether they're in the source code behind or even in the CSS. And you can kind of circle stuff on a web page with a marker and then add comments, and then your colleagues can come and either comment on it or mark it as closed or whatever. It can be pretty cool when, especially for people maybe who are not working immediately with an outsourced developer or something like that, it's easy to share stuff back and forth. I don't own stock in any of these companies, unfortunately, so I have no conflict of interest to declare. Bug Herd is another cooler one. I've only used a demo of this, and then it was in beta, and it was free, and it was awesome, and then they started charging, and I'm too cheap, so I haven't been using it lately. But it's even cooler. It's really just a plug-in in your browser, and you can drop little... You look at the live site, and you drop little marks around, and people then can come back, and you can assign them and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. You may want to check it out. And then another one, if you're looking for a way to actually do a little bit more traditional issue tracking, with tickets that can get assigned and resolved, Fog Bugs is good, and it's for small teams. It's even free, and it's quite reasonably priced, and it's pretty cool. I'm really embarrassed to admit that my wife and I use this at home for house projects. As if my Lego iPhone case didn't cement my geek status, this is really what totally does it. Learn how to write good bug reports and then use one of those tools to pass them along. Technique number three, pay attention to instructions on whatever it is you're testing and then violate them. So, of course, you want to actually read the instructions to make sure things are clear. That's part of your testing. But you really ought to ignore the instructions or not even pretend that you hadn't read them at all. Do you know why? Because the users are going to do that very thing. So you might as well pretend you're a user in this sense. So it says, enter your phone number in this format. Well, don't enter it in that format and see what happens. If it can't handle when you don't put the hyphens in your phone number and the whole form breaks, well, that's breaking badly. You want to learn this because people are not going to type the hyphen in. Validation on forms is a classic thing to look for the little red asterisk and then leave that one blank. see if you can handle that and see what kind of error message you get and can you go back and fill it in. Or does it not identify with what you did wrong? Does it wipe out other fields once you throw validation errors? That's one of my favorite ones. Like, I spent all this time filling out this form, and then I didn't put in, United States, and now all of a sudden everything's gone. That's a sure way to make users mad. When I'm in Canada, don't insist that I have a 5-digit zip code. If fields are left blank, will you still be able to follow up? Like, if it says emails, if email is the only thing that's required on there, but it actually lets it get through, the person thinks they've submitted their form, they're going to be mad at you that you didn't get back to them. This is the kind of thing you've got to be able to follow up on. A form or almost anything else that needs a manual, it needs to be redone. You don't want to have lots of instructions, particularly on a simpler kind of thing. Okay, this is actually segues to technique number 4. This is in the earlier screen. This is what was called variations and mutations. Don't try it only once, especially if you did everything correct. That's the other thing. I talked about having somebody pull up that. Oh, that form looks great, no problem. But I've also seen people pull it up, fill it in correctly, and submit it, and think that it works. No. Again, you got to try that a couple of different ways. Again, violate the instructions, leave some stuff off. You in testing, you're trying to find the edge cases. You're trying to find where things stop working. And of course, everything's got an edge case. I mean, if you leave the whole form blank, of course, you don't expect you to get people's emails out of that. But you want to know where those are. So you got to try multiple things. You got to try things that are close. Leave 1 digit off a credit card number. See if the whole thing shuts down because they failed to talk to the credit card merchant correctly, that kind of thing. So be a weirdo. I mean, this is variations and mutations, right? This is how genetics works. Sometimes it goes well, sometimes it goes badly. And we get big brains because there was a mutation somewhere, but so it's not all bad. Technique number 5, watch the other end of the pipe. Again, I'm talking largely about things where there's user input and you're trying to get something out of it here, but with thinking about forms. But again, you got to test these kinds of things. You might think, I did 6 different ways. I filled out the form. It seemed to work fine. Well, no, you got to go and look in the admin interface and see whether things are coming through. You have to test the results of their actions, not just the actions, how they're going to actually take place. So I've got a couple of things that I'm talking about here. Confirmation pages. These examples are mostly from forms, but you can imagine how this works. Confirmation pages and emails that go to the user. You got to read those, right? Especially if you're using a vendor who's worked with other schools. I mean, we had one, thank you, from North Park, we were testing it. Thank you for contacting Azusa Pacific University. And we were like, okay, that's actually not the idea that we had for thanking them. That's something that came out the other end of the pipe that we might not have noticed if we hadn't actually gone through and submitted the form and then wanted to look at it. Equally important, notifications sent to you, especially if you're getting data by email or you're being notified that new data has been put into a database or something like that. You want to make sure that those are clear and complete and you're getting the information that you need to out of there. We recently, our forms broke in this regard. The email notifications that our recruiters were going to count on using information from were broken. Everything else was working fine. Nobody, the users didn't care, so... it was not as urgent a problem as it might have been, but we couldn't edit any of the forms without breaking the notifications we were getting, and that was bad. And then thirdly, insist on seeing the admin interface. If you're, we had one form that was scrambling the Social Security numbers. It was originally a security thing, and that was great, but then we actually didn't know what the Social Security numbers were, even in the secure interface. So. You got to do that. Okay, technique number 6. Listen to that nagging little voice. Do you know that little voice? Editors sometimes know this. The thing that you, in the third read, you're like, oh yeah, I'm finally going to realize that sentence isn't working. I liked that word choice or something. It's that little voice that says, no, it's not going to be good. Well, this is true in technical stuff too. And as it says, because no, it's not going to be okay. If it bugs you a little bit and you got to tune into that voice that things aren't going well, again, that's what some other user is going to discover. And this is a real-world example, I'm sorry to say. This is an event registration or part of an event registration form we are currently using. And when we were testing it, we thought, well, yeah, there are three buttons at the bottom. Maybe that'll be confusing. No, it'll be okay. Nobody's going to be bothered by knowing which of the three buttons to click. Well, yeah, it turns out they really are bothered by which three. But, you know, everybody clicks the big blue one because it says continue, right? Well, no, the one you actually have to click is the check availability button. So we're frustrated about this, and we're working on it. But it's that nagging little voice that suggests there might be something for you to fix. Finally, technique number 7 is watch for value in what you're doing. This is partly for your own to keep your own spirits up. You're taking extra time to do this. You're finding problems, which can be sad. But if you remember that there's value in what you're doing, not only is that good for you emotionally, I think, but actually it helps explain what you're doing to your clients, to your bosses, to anybody who's like, how come that thing's not done yet? I can't believe you're sending that back again. It's, you know, come on, we got to launch. If you remember that you're creating value here, both for you and your users, it really can be big value. One of the first, this is pure luck, so I really tell this story about myself, but through no virtue of my own, but right when I started at North Park, I was just trying to do some routine testing of stuff that was on the site, and so I filled out the prospect inquiry form for undergraduates, okay, our bread and butter revenue stream, and then I asked, okay, who gets that email? You know, who gets that? And I walked around, and nobody, you know, seemed to have gotten that one. I was like, well, who gets them? And, oh, well, you know, Sherry should get it. And, Sherry, when's the last time you got one of these? I don't know. Let me look. I don't have any in my inbox. I don't know when. So, again, no virtue of my own. I just happened to stumble across a form that was silently failing. Okay, that's a great example of fails badly, right? It doesn't have to blow up in the sky for it to be a fail badly. All these kids were filling out these forms. Who knows how many, right? And they think we're... Can you see what I'm saying? This is how bad this is. Where, you know, they're happy. La, la, la. Confirmation message on the screen. They get the email. And we weren't getting the confirmation. So we turned it back on in the next just couple of weeks before that form was actually going to be retired anyway. 40 came in or something like that. And my point here is on Watch for Value, I knew that I had just paid my whole salary for that whole year. Because at the rate those hot prospects become, you know, qualify and apply and yield for us, you know, it was tons of revenue in just that one thing. So I felt happy. And every time you fix something, you should be watching for it. The other reason you should watch for it is because you are not testing to achieve perfection for perfection's sake. You may be a perfectionist naturally, and so you have a strong drive to do this. You do sometimes have to stop yourself from just wanting to polish everything till it's absolutely perfect. The point of doing this is to find where the value is for the user so they have a good experience and don't get confused and go away, and finding value for your institution in the ways like not losing undergraduate prospects. So whatever you do, make it fail. And make it fail before your users do. That is your job, to make it fail. So break it really good. Here's the my Twitter handle if you want to talk more on Twitter. You got those couple of tags. I see some of you have been tweeting already. People seem to be depressed by the fact that my wife and I use fog bunks at home. And then that link there at the bottom, it's Octomy and MMP11 there at the end. So on that, at that link, you'll find a PDF of the slides and links to the to all those URLs I mentioned. So I think we got some time left for questions and or comments, or love to hear other techniques that you've got for breaking things when you're testing. Right. Are you talking about services that will actually scan for broken links and that kind of thing, or? Right. Yeah, I think they're, I mean, that's great if you're sure that the automation works. I mean, sometimes you're just building two things on top of each other that need testing. We don't do a lot of that. Frankly, we want to hand test stuff. So I don't have too much to say about that. There's another hand over here somewhere. Right. Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, there's something. I'm glad there was a happy ending to that story. Because there actually are some users who just will complain about everything. And so really, you want to find the edge cases. You don't necessarily want to eliminate all the edge cases. There are some things that you're just that are not going to be worth fixing, or actually aren't a bug. They think it is. But yeah, no, a person who's particular. In fact, I just read. I wish I had a citation for you, but I saw this. Online, there's a firm outside of Chicago that's employing people with Asperger's syndrome who are, you know, obsessive about detail and willing to repeat things and do things over and over again and pay, you know, really close attention to detail. And apparently they're awesome quality testers. You might have some people on your staff, you know, who are suited for that. I mean, no, all jokes aside, I don't mean to... make light of that, but this is a great idea. This firm is actually giving folks something that they're actually really good at and finding the value they can contribute to people who are testing. Yeah. 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 Oh yeah, right. Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's something, and like the example I gave about the something that's been working for years, you forget about it. Actually having some disciplines where you actually go back and review, especially your core, you know, really important things, either that are legally important like that or financially important, you want those to work. Yeah. Yeah, again, it's a whole other subject. I think some of these things, I don't myself know as much as I'd like about it, but you need to, it's actually under the principle of remembering that you're looking for what users are going to experience. I thought that the keynote yesterday was great, being aware of the kinds of experience that people will have with your site. You know, it really definitely raises the bar and increases the complexity of this task when you're doing technical testing. To realize it, wow, what's a screen reader going to do with your forms? Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's helpful to call yourself, you know, test Boyd or whatever, so that you can weed those out when it's time. But actually, having junk in there, again, you'll learn how long, you know, how long can my middle name be, you know, if you just pound on the keyboard for a while too. That's another good one. I think we got time for one question left. Right. The developer will get annoyed because I'll point it out and he just wants me to fix it. But I feel like if I fix it, then he's gonna keep making the same mistake. So right. Lately I've compromised, I point it out and fix it. So I feel like that undermines a bit of his motivation to not keep repeating the mistake. Right, yeah, I mean it's especially if it's something you think he might not be aware of. You know, you gotta work on it. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just an age old problem of how to, you know, you're gonna give a man a fish or a fishing pole, right? So, excellent. I think we're out of time,
that's
right?
Our time.
Great. Thanks a lot.